And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, today I want to pose two numbers. See which one you choose. Here's one number, the number one. Here's the other number, the number 50. You know what I'm talking about?
I think I do, but you might want to explain to our listeners.
The question is, we who live in the United States, do we live in a single nation, or do we live separately in one of 50 separate states who've negotiated a compact to get along with each other, like the European Union, or like the Articles of Confederation 300 years ago?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that that's a discussion that the United States had back in the later part of the 18th century. They tried it one way, as you said, the Articles of Confederation didn't work very well.
So but Nikki Haley thinks that that's where we are. She made a speech last week, and that was her whole point, that we live in a compact of states, not in one nation. Now, when I went to high school, I was taught, undoubtedly brainwashed, that the Civil War settled this issue, that this was an issue for the first decades of the country's existence, and that the slave owners decided that this was a compact because, after all, that was the only way that they felt they could really hold on to their institution, slavery, and that culminated in the Civil War. And as you point out many times, linguistically, we changed from the United States are to the United States is. But Nikki Haley, she's back to it, are.
Yeah. It's, you know, this week we had Groundhog Day, where the same thing keeps getting repeated, you know, all the time. And we're back to repeating this.
Yeah.
Something that was, you know, from the 1770s and 1780s, and then into the 1860s, and now we're back.
Nikki Haley is supposed to be the adult in the room, right? She's the one that they're all saying, well, all right, she upholds the banner against encroaching fascism.
Right.
What is she upholding? She's upholding a leap into the past that preceded fascism. That was slavery. Outright slavery. Legal slavery.
And that was the arguments in the during the civil rights era from the 1940s to the 1970s. You know, states' rights.
States' rights.
As they used to say. And we do have 50 different states, but there is an overall and overarching thing isn't the right word, but there's an overarching presence called the United States of America that sets certain parameters that apply to everybody in the United States. And
you always hear politicians, they're always right-wingers, who talk about, you know, Kentucky values, or I represent Maine values, or whatever. What the hell are Kentucky values distinct from Oregon values, Florida values? They're just the United. What do they do in Florida that's different in terms of values? What do they believe? What could they believe that would be different than the values of any other place? For that matter, what could American values be that are different than the values of any other country? People fall in love everywhere. People are against murder everywhere. People are for, you know, nobility, honesty, solidarity everywhere. It doesn't matter what country you're in, much less what state you're in. Pretty soon you'll say, I believe in 14th Street values, not 18th Street values.
Well, that's the gangs, right?
Yeah, that's the gangs. That's right.
But I think, Jake, you know, you would say that during the 1930s, America had different values than Nazi Germany. And today they have different values than what the Ayatollahs have in Iran.
Those are political values. Those are that's ideological values. Yes, those are different values. That's true. I agree with that. That's true. One is in the main line of the humanist tradition and develops the humanist tradition. It's a direct descendant of the Enlightenment, and the other is an attempt to destroy that tradition, either because of religious reasons or because of just evil reasons, because people want to oppress and enslave others.
Or people using religion to advance their causes.
But the point is humanism and it's anti-humanism.
Yeah. We've talked about that in different ways over our period of time. Evangelical movement and conservative Catholicism movements to try to impose those, if you want to use the word values, those positions on the rest of people. And it's interesting because it's concentrated mostly or more recently on the abortion issue. But when it's left up to the people, those who want to impose always come out on the short end when it's put up to a vote of the people in even the more conservative states, Kentucky, Ohio, Kansas. The fact is that people, the electorate views things differently than the fundamentalists who are trying to run the states.
Even the rank and file of the evangelical movement, when it comes down to their rights, almost always fall on the side of upholding humanist rights for themselves.
Yes, that's the thing. What's good for me may not be good for thee.
That's right. That's right. The restrictive ideology that I proclaim, I proclaim on your behalf, not on my behalf.
Yeah. I always say things that work. There's a difference between working things in the first person and working things in the third person.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. Well, that is why I think, the political struggle that we see that allows a Nikki Haley to get away with saying, just a compact of states is occasioned by the fact that the MAGA movement is attempting a real radical restructuring of the American constitutional order. They want it to go back to states' rights. They want that. They need that. Right?
Except when it doesn't work for them.
Well, yes, then they don't want it.
That's what I said, like the ballot measures on abortion.
That's right.
Where they try to keep it off the ballot.
Well, but that's why they push everything to the courts. Now that they dominate the courts. Yeah. Because they know, for example, if it gets to the Supreme Court, they've got a reliable support of five people educated by the right-wing Catholic movement, believing in the anti-humanist philosophies and traditions of the right-wing Catholic movement. And they are confident that that movement, those judges, will allow them to reverse the 250-some-odd-year successful history of encroaching, of growing liberty against the encroachments of religious orthodoxy, which is what the humanist tradition, the struggle for the humanist tradition is.
Well, the one thing is that they're fighting against the tide of people not affiliating with religion.
That's right.
And that's why
people aren't affiliated with religion, because people see that it represents a step backward in their own rights.
Yeah, they don't realize they've driven a lot of people away from religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have some important court cases because the political struggle gets reflected really in court.
Yeah.
The right wing has pushed it that way. Now that they control the courts openly, they would like the courts to substitute for democracy.
Yeah, well, in Pennsylvania, we've had a fight over the courts over the last decade or so. And the Democrats were able to seize control of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court back in 2015.
They didn't actually seize control. They got elected.
They got elected. But that changed the control.
Yeah.
We saw what happened in Wisconsin this last year or two. Same thing.
Yeah.
But Pennsylvania, for some reason, the Republican Party fell asleep when there were three seats up for election in 2015, and that shifted the court majority. And they've only been able to elect one. The Republicans have only been able to elect one justice since. They put a lot of money into this last election, or certain people put a lot of money into it, and the Democrats still won. So right now it's a 5-2 majority. We're going to have a battle in 2025 when the three justices are up for retention. You're going to see a lot of nastiness in that, but that's down the road. What happened this week, though, is really probably one of the first volleys in that election. We're in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on an issue about Medicaid and coverage and whatever, took apart the Dobbs decision, which of course was the first decision in American history that took away a right from people, and on the abortion issue. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court came out and said, because Pennsylvania has an equal rights amendment, that since women are the only ones that can bear children, that any act that restricts their ability to do so or to affects them in that manner in reproductive rights is inherently discriminatory. And therefore, should not be allowed, or at least has a very high burden of proof as to why it should be allowed. And one of the concurring opinions went even further and discussed the Dobbs decision. And reference to history. If you remember, Justice Alito talked about we have to go back to originalism and in 1789 and what was this or that. And Justice Wecht said that what he did was recite bad history. The judges are not historians, or he wasn't an historian, and undercut virtually everything that he said about that. This is going to be an opinion that's going to reverberate throughout the country. We also remember that the mantra of the anti-abortion movement was that Roe was wrong. It should have been left up to the states. It shouldn't be. And this goes back to whether we were a unitary or a different state or a 50 different state organization. And as soon as Dobbs came down, all of a sudden the anti-abortionists said, now we want to make a national law about it instead of leaving it up to the states, because the states were doing, were not following Dobbs as being in being restrictive.
Actually, so, in every case where people in the states had a say in the matter, they repudiated the Dobbs decision.
Right. Right. So, and that, the 1-50 argument is, you know, if this is a fundamental right, then it's got to apply all over. It just can't apply in New York and Texas, or in New York and California, not in Texas and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't vote on whether, that South Carolina can hold slaves and Massachusetts says no. You know, there's fundamental rights.
We did vote that way. I mean, we lived that
way.
It didn't work.
We did, but the Civil War changed all that.
Right.
Changed all that. But don't forget, the Civil War didn't free women. They didn't get the right to vote till over 50 years later.
They didn't have they didn't get the right to own property. They didn't get the right to testify in court or to sit on juries.
And that was part of what Justice Weck in Pennsylvania was saying. About these things, how these laws were formulated. So,
if Nikki Haley was right, she probably wouldn't have the right to run for president.
Yeah, that's the irony, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
You know, but she, you know, I'm not sure we should be spending a lot of time on her campaign. We can, I think you're right about bringing up her positions, because her campaign still is going nowhere.
Why do you think people are still giving her money? Why are the Koch interests giving her money? You say her campaign is going nowhere. Everybody else says the same thing. These people read everybody else. In fact, they pay everybody else. So, but why do they? I mean, it's true, they have a lot of money. But even if you have a lot of money, you don't necessarily want to throw it in the sewer.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happened with the DeSantis backers. They stopped giving him money.
Immediately, yeah.
So,
so why are they giving Haley money?
I'm not sure. Are they really trying to undermine Donald Trump, which would result in another Biden term? Or are they looking forward to 2028 and saying, she's our gal at this point, which I don't think is happening, because they don't know who else could be in the mix in 2028.
Not only that, for her type of conservatism to have a lot of support would require another sea change in the Republican Party. She's not the person who can do that. She's not. She doesn't have that ability. She doesn't have that organizational strength. Plus, the people who believe it are a tiny group among the Republicans, and they've been driven out. So why would the Koch brothers imagine that this tiny group, which is already lost, is all of a sudden somehow going to be anointed with the strength to do what they couldn't do before and haven't been able to do since the Tea Party days? Don't forget, Trump isn't the first one on the scene. Trump just inherited the Tea Party movement and developed it more.
Which was backed by the Koch brothers.
Which was, yes, that was backed by the Koch brothers. But Trump's development of it is in a somewhat different direction. He got their enthusiasm, the Tea Party brothers, the Tea Party movement's enthusiasm, but he pushed it in a fascist direction, not a libertarian direction.
Right, right.
So why would they imagine that Haley has the ability to reverse that whole trend? You're not talking now about diverting the movement, not, about you know pushing it in this direction, this rivulet or that rivulet. Now you want to turn it back altogether.
Possibly they're thinking, well, if by some miracle she wins, we have control over her, and we can get her.
That really is magical thinking. That's really magic. And, you know, it goes against the whole... The problem the American society faces is the problems thrown up by the enormous inequality of the last 40 years,
right,
where an enormous amount of wealth was created and it was kept by 2% of the population, 5% of the population, didn't benefit, and relatively speaking, immiserated most of the people, relatively speaking. That's the fact. The reaction of people is to that. Now, some people think that that's caused by Mexican immigrants, and other people think it's caused by finance capital. And then there's all kinds of thoughts in between. But everybody feels the negative effect of that growing inequality.
Yeah.
Why do they think that they're going to be able to reverse that consciousness when the growing inequality continues to grow?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is... The fundamental, the most important issue, or the biggest problem in America, and it has been for some time. It's nothing new. Don't forget, Brandeis back, 50 years, more, 70 years ago, Justice Brandeis said something to the effect that we can either have wealth concentrated in a few, or you can have democracy. You can't have both. I'm paraphrasing him now.
He also made him younger.
Yeah, well, it was towards the end of his of his career on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, he went on the bench in 1916. I think the quote was made in the 30s, just before he died.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, yeah, so it's 80 years ago. But anyhow, we have that. And, you know, to this day, don't forget, there was just a tax bill that was passed in the House that that restored tax cuts to corporations.
Yeah.
Or tax things.
Is passed by politicians who say they don't like welfare. They think welfare is bad for them.
Right. And the quid pro quo, though, was to get a tax credit for poor families that would help, lift them above the poverty line.
Yeah, so, but it's restoring a tax credit that's 50% in its extent to what existed last month.
Yeah, before Joe Manchin had, wouldn't go along with it.
Right.
If you remember, that's why there wasn't in there. So we had that. You know, you talk about billionaires and you know, trying to run things and control things. We know that in Pennsylvania, we have that Senate race with Dave McCormick, the hedge fund guy, versus Bob Casey. And this week, the prime donors to McCormick came out, and they're all billionaires. Ken Griffin, Ken Langone, that group of people.
If you're buying stuff from Home Depot, you're financing McCormick.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. In a way.
Yeah.
And I heard who was it? Bernie Marcus, who used to be the CEO of Home Depot, you know, a while back, condemning, you know, what he calls welfare type payments, you know, the PPP payments to people.
Yeah.
During the COVID epidemic, and
the
course,
PPP
never...
payments went to companies. They didn't go to people.
Yeah.
Went to companies to give them money to make payroll.
But people also got money, and they wound up spending it at places like Home Depot.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't go out. They worked on, you know, improving their homes.
Right.
And, of course, Home Depot got a lot of tax credits from a lot of places when they built their stores. But, of course, that's, again, first person versus third person. What's good for me is not good for thee.
Yeah.
At least the polls in Pennsylvania have Bob Casey in a pretty good position. They have him up by 12. 12. The last poll was 12. There was a poll a month or two ago that had him by 10. Then one came up and said he was only up by 3. And this one came in and said he's up by 12. Had a very close race between Biden and Trump. But yeah, Casey seems to be holding that lead.
Do you think Trump can beat the Casey vote? Do you think that in the final analysis, Casey will bring Biden through rather than Biden bringing Casey through?
I just think that now in Pennsylvania, people, will, you know, if they want to split, they'll split. I don't think that either one pulls them through. I think what will pull them both, if they both get through, are their policies and how well they're able to sell them to the people and saying, look, this is what we do to benefit you, and this is what Trump and McCormick are going to do to benefit themselves.
You know, polling has indicated, and studies of the votes of the last election indicated, that the strategy that has won for the Democrats has been mobilizing the base and not paying attention to trying to get the swing vote.
Yeah.
Is that, from your contacts within the Democratic Party here in Pennsylvania, is that what they're motivated by? Is that the strategy?
Well, they're still say that the abortion issue is important for them. And there are swing voters in the Philadelphia suburbs. The people that tended to be lean towards Republicanism, the women have said absolutely no way we're going to go along with this. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive in those terms, but we'll see where they're, you know, I think that they're still going to emphasize the abortion issue, and then we'll see what else they can. They think the democracy issue does sell to a certain extent. It sells to those Republicans who have left the Republican Party because of that. You know, you know the pundits who are all out there, the George Wills and the Bill Kristols and that group of people.
The guys who lost out.
Yeah.
But though they lost out, they lost out within the Republican Party, but they represent a significant swing faction in the general election.
Yeah, and it's going to go state by state. I still don't think Ohio can be in play for the Democrats. I don't think Florida will be as bad as it was. But it also depends on personalities in races like the Senate and the House versus the national ones. You know, we're talking about billionaires and talking about different state values, so to speak. We had something this week occurred in just to our south in Delaware, wherein a court ruled that the bonus that was given to Elon Musk by the Tesla board of $55 billion in effect of stock or money or combination was excessive and could
excessive?
Not stay.
A billion a week is excessive, you feel?
Better than a billion a week. Yeah, it was ruled excessive. And it's really the first time that there was something of this nature where the courts kind of ruled in that direction, saying there's just this is just one bridge too far. Of course, Elon Musk's reaction to that was, well, we're going to move the place of incorporation from Delaware to Texas, where the laws are more where he thinks the laws may be more favorable to him. So I guess you could say there's different values in corporate governance between Delaware and other states. But Delaware's been more favorable to corporations than
most.
Yeah,
I mean, Delaware is the headquarters not of all these corporations, not because they're a wonderful beach state. It's because they have wonderful pro-corporate laws that protect the incumbents in any governing structure of every corporation. Very hard for shareholders to prevail in suits against corporations or corporate management in Delaware.
Right. This is also the second time that, remember the lawsuit over Twitter, when Elon Musk, whether he would could be made to pay the $44 billion that he had offered when he tried to get out of it. And that was being brought in Delaware and
decided by the same judge.
Yeah, well, it was going to be decided. Never got to the final stage because Musk backed down and said, okay, I'll pay the $44 billion. So he's got a bone to pick with Delaware twice. That's the other thing. These billionaires don't think that they're constrained by laws.
Well, they aren't generally, right?
Yeah, and or they try to get the laws changed it favors them.
Art Pope bought the whole state of North Carolina for $2 million. Changed all the laws, right?
Well, yeah, and Jeffrey Yaz in Pennsylvania has been somewhat less successful.
He's got a long-range push to get rid of public education. He keeps at it. He doesn't give up.
And that's rule number one, my rule. Think long-term.
Yeah.
And
all right.
He's got money.
We got to think short-term because we've come to the end.
We've come to the end. Well, the good news was winter, is going to end soon. Groundhog said, Tony Phil said that. By the way, Governor Shapiro was there again this year with his whole family. And so it wasn't one and done for him. And we'll see how accurate the groundhog is. He doesn't take on political predictions, thank goodness.
We went through this entire discussion without mentioning Donald Trump's name once. I wanted to mention it just so that...
Okay. I thought we may have tangentially touched on it.
Tangential, but.
Yeah.
Interesting. It is. I'm sure next week will be different.
Yes.
But anyway, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.